Today on Rocking the Suburbs.
Tilling and John Renborn decided to have a cricket match on the quad at Columbia University.
Hey everybody, it's Patrick here. Welcome to the final episode in our series on the Reverend Gary Davis. I know I'm sad too that it's going to be over, but I sure have enjoyed it. And I want to send a big thank you to Kirk Gallagher right off the top for all his contributions to this wonderful set of episodes. Just amazing stuff. And today, there's plenty of good stuff left. And we will get to that in just 1 minute. I want to do a couple quick pieces of housekeeping here, Suburbs Pod-wise. First of all, I want to remind you once again that the deadline for January new music is Sunday, the 15th of February, 2026 at midnight. So get your picks in by the end of the day Sunday. And we will begin on the very next day with some picks from Jim Linehan, kicking us off with new music from January. Looking forward to that very much. And also for our daily listeners, regular listeners, Friday's episode, the episode that will appear on Friday, that's right, the 13th, will be posted late in the day. So there won't be an episode in the morning. We're doing a bracket recap, and that's going to be recorded Friday afternoon, early evening, and then we're going to post it directly after that. So look for that sometime late on Friday. And you can certainly listen to that anytime on the weekend, of course. You're always welcome. With that out of the way, let's get back to the final part of our Reverend Gary Davis episode. Episode 4 is going to bring it all to a close. You're going to hear me asking Kurt a question about some notable covers. And he's going to talk about one musician who was a specialist in playing Reverend Gary Davis covers. And with that, we got the big TDK reel-to-reel threaded up. And I'm going to reach over now and hit play. So here we go. Well, you noted the Stones and the Dead. Were there other credits or notable covers that that were done?
I think one of the biggest evangelists for Reverend Gary Davis's music is Jorma Kaukonen. Jorma was in Jefferson Airplane and then Hot Tuna, and he has solo albums. His album Qua is such a great album, but he's got a lot of solo records, and he plays all the time. He's still playing. I think he just had his 80th birthday, but he's still out. I saw him last year. I've seen him so many times because a lot of my friends are huge Jorma fans. I've seen him probably a dozen times. And he always plays Davis songs. And he had a camp out in Ohio where you could go stay at his camp. I did go one time. And you stay in these little barracks, basically. And you take workshops and you learn how to play stuff. And he would teach you Davis songs. So he did that for like 10 years. People would go to his farm and do workshops and learn Davis songs from the master, from the captain, Jorma. And they would have other guest teachers there too. But yeah, he's been a big proponent of Davis's music throughout the years, and he still plays Davis stuff all the time.
And so I guess that kind of brings us to his students and where they took his music, but more than his music, right? I think that there's a couple of people who were talking about the fact that, yeah, he was Reverend Gary Davis, but his music couldn't really be described as strictly gospel. It couldn't really strictly be described as folk music, and it certainly couldn't strictly be described as blues. And it's this individual thing that kind of defies categorization. He invented his own musical vocabulary, partially by the way he didn't like to, you know, repeat a song. When he played it again, he always made a little variation, right? I find that so fascinating. And you were saying at one point, Kurt, of his recordings, when you listen to this stuff, almost all of it, right, is first takes.
Yeah, he wasn't about take two. He was only about take one.
Yeah.
Something that Dylan must have picked up from him, right? Because Dylan famously didn't like to repeat, you know, a song the same way when he was recording it.
Yeah, and he never played it the same way twice. And, you know, right. It was just like, get it while you can.
And so it's so fascinating that his students have kept this... kept his inspiration and his tradition alive, right? What else? What better compliment can you pay a teacher than to, you know, kind of carry that with you always?
Yeah, yeah. All these people that I have a whole list of his students here. Well, I think I read it before, but they all became, you know, just like Davis evangelists. They all just spoke the gospel of Davis, even though they weren't religious people, but they're just the guitar of Reverend Gary Davis. They all, yeah. Anyone who studied with him went on to be, you know, musicians and teachers and spreading the word of Davis's music. That's why, like at the beginning, I said I was going to argue that he's one of the most influential guitar players ever, is because of this legacy that he created here in New York with all these students that went on pilgrimages to his house in Queens to learn how to play guitar. There's one guy from Pittsburgh, I'm blanking out on his name right now, but it will come to me in a minute, but he tells a story in the movie, no, he tells a story in one of his instructional videos about flying to New York the day after he graduated from high school and calling Davis from the airport and getting directions to his house and going straight to his house the day after
he
got out of high school and going there to learn from Davis. And he became one of the biggest teachers. He teaches for Stefan Grossman's Guitar Workshop. He's the leader in teaching Davis songs on DVD. I just bought a bunch of his DVDs. I'm sorry, I'm blanking out on his name. We can add it to the notes later.
Yeah, we'll definitely add it. That's fascinating to me that he would do that, like, this is your high school graduation money. What are you going to do with this? I'm going to go find Reverend Gary Davis. That's the greatest. And also, not only as a teacher, Davis, but the people he taught eventually, in many cases, would also teach others. So they would pass that along, pay that forward. And in a subtitle here, a little note from our preparation notes. Yes, folks, we do prepare on occasion. We do have some notes that we put together. You've got a topic here, or a bullet point, essentially, Kurt, and I'll read it verbatim. How I learned from one of Reverend Davis's last students, took lessons from a real Piedmont blues player, and this is what I'm most excited about, and played cricket with John Renborn. I have to hear this in detail.
How much time do you have? I can give you the edited down version. There's a couple guitar players that were both raised in around New York City, really in Long Island, but right on the border of Queens and Long Island, that started a camp. So one of the guitar players is Bob Brosman, and the other guitar player is Woody Mann.
Mm-hmm.
Bob is an ethnomusicologist. His uncle ran Cafe Society, which is one of the most important jazz clubs in the city.
Yeah.
In the 50s and 60s, maybe even earlier than that. But Bob actually lived out in California, but he grew up in Queens in Long Island, right on the border. So these guys were friends. They knew each other through different guitar connections, and they started a seminar called International Guitar Seminars in 1999. They would do one-week seminars at Columbia University, and then they would do another week later in the summer out on the West Coast at University of California at Santa Cruz. And they did this for 6 years. And I went to 10 of these seminars. I went to everyone at Columbia except the last one. I went to the first five in Columbia. I went to one in Santa Cruz. I went to one in Seattle. They moved up to Seattle 1 year. And I went to another one in Santa Cruz. So I guess that's eight altogether. But they were 1 week. You would stay in a dorm room on a college campus. And there would be all these legendary guitar players teaching. Happy Traum would be there. Yorma Kalkinen was there 1 year. Bob Brosman, who's an amazing, well, he was an amazing, amazing guitar player and teacher, and Woody Mann, who was one of Davis's last students. Woody Mann yep. started studying with Davis when he was 16, and he studied with him until Davis died in 72. And Woody tells the story, he might tell it in the movie that we've been talking about, that he was the son of a single mother. He didn't have a father in his life, and he started, you know, working with Davis, and he would be over there every weekend in his teenage years, and Davis sort of became like a father figure for him.
Yep. He does mention that.
And Woody just he becomes one of the best jazz players around New York City, and he does acoustic jazz guitar, and he was a master. And you just there, I sent you a song called Top Hat, which is a really good example of what Woody Mann does. But he started this camp, and I started going right away. I met Bob Brosman. I was in Germany visiting my wife's family, and he was playing in a bar in Lübeck. So it was like that was like a 90-minute drive from my wife's family. So we drove over to Lübeck. I met Bob Brosman at this bar, and he told me to come to the camp. And I said, "Oh, I don't play Delta. I don't play slide. I'm just like a finger picker." And he said, "No, there's going to be all kinds of stuff there." So he talked me into going to the camp. But then when I got to the camp, one of the first classes I took was with Woody Mann, and he was teaching the music of Reverend Gary Davis. And he said, "Wow. If you listen to Davis, this sounds impossible, but I'm just going to break it down. I'm going to make it really easy. Just do this and then do that and then do the next thing." And he just broke it down, and he made it sound doable, you know. And we were at Columbia, like on the quad under a tree with like five students and Woody. And he just made it so relaxing, and he made it seem so easy. He actually taught us how to play Reverend Gary Davis songs. And I have friends to this day that we get together a couple times a year, and we play other stuff, but we play Davis songs. We play like five or six Davis songs every time we get together. And I sent you a picture of three of my best friends. We went to see Woody.
You did.
His last concert. Sorry.
That's all right. It's all right. It's an amazing photo. It is. And for those of you who are familiar with John Fahey or Fahey acolytes like myself, he plays with Fahey on an album called Old Fashioned Love. And there are three duets on there with Woody that are just incredible. So that's another, if you want to hear how Woody integrates with Fahey, it's really a wonderful, wonderful couple songs on the second side, I believe, of that album. So
he was such a sweet guy, and he taught a lot around the city, and people got to know him. That I became friends with him because I took lessons from him apart from these seminars. We hung out at these seminars. We would be up till 3 a.m. drinking beer and playing guitars and eating pizza every night for a week.
Wow.
It was like being a college kid again in the late 90s, early aughts. And so we got to know these people really well. Bob Brosman produced an album for me. And Woody Mann produced a video for me. We got to know each other really well. I told him I wanted to do a video for Homespun or for Stefan Grossman, but I wasn't really good enough. And he said, well, I do videos, so we'll do a video for you. So I did a kid's music video with Woody, and he was a producer. And we just became friends. You know, I was to his apartment a couple times. He lived in Times Square. And he was just a real sweetheart. And he came. Remember I talked about jamming with my friends and playing Davis songs? He showed up to one of our jams one time. Woody Mann, this legendary New York guitar figure, hanging out at a party playing guitar with us. He was such a sweetheart. We all loved him so much. And we like I said, he taught us these Davis songs, and we get together and play them, and it's keeping the whole Davis thing alive.
That's amazing. When did Woody pass, Kurt?
I think it was 3 years ago.
Okay.
The picture I sent you was his last concert. I think that was in... don't quote me on the dates, but I think that was 2022 or 2023. And he passed away like 3 months after that.
Oh, okay.
He was young. He was young. He still had a lot of living to do.
Far too early, that's for sure.
But Woody had a lot of friends all over the world, one of which was John Rinborn. Robert Tilling was another guy who wrote a biography of Davis. And he's a famous painter who lived on the island of Jersey in the UK. If you look up Robert Tilling, you'll see some of his beautiful paintings. But he wrote a book about Davis. He could play harmonica. And he was there at these seminars with his wife, sort of like running the schedule in the office. And if you ever had any questions, or if the food wasn't right or whatever, you would talk to Bob Tilling. And I had no idea that he was this legendary painter and was a Davis expert. He was just the guy running the office at the seminar, you know. Such a sweet guy. So I knew Tilling. And Rinborn was like, you'd go to his room and he would have like hundreds of empty beer bottles lining the wall in his dorm room. And at one point, Tilling and John Rinborn decided to have a cricket match on the quad at Columbia University.
That is the best.
So we went out onto the quad and they picked teams, and I ended up being on Rinborn's team. And we played cricket, but we were a bunch of, you know, half-drunk American guys. We don't know how to play cricket. There's a ball and there's a bat, and we're just trying to swing as hard as we can and hit home runs. I was trying to hit it up onto the steps of the journalism building from where I was, you know. And Rinborn was just like, he was seeing us hitting the ball as hard as we could and trying to hit home runs, and he was just shaking his head like, what a bunch of idiots, you know.
Did you have wickets? Were there wickets there?
Yeah, no, they had some wickets. Had wickets. It was all set up. We just didn't know how to do it.
They could teach you guitar. They could teach you Reverend Gary Davis songs, but they're not going to be able to teach you cricket. Takes a lot longer.
And I love John Rinborn, but I took a couple of his classes too when I was like, oh, I don't think I have the patience for this. It was so intricate and beautiful, and it's like definitely not my style.
That's funny. Yeah.
If you compliment my little bass lines that I can play on the guitar, it's nothing like what, you know, John Rinborn can do.
Thank you. That's British folk in a kind of a parallel universe. Maybe one day we'll get into some British folk.
But that's a fantastic story.
Still acoustic guitar playing, though. It was all acoustic guitar, finger-picking,
exactly.
Acoustic guitar. So that's what we're talking about. It's the legacy of finger-picking acoustic guitar from, America and all over the world. John Renborn was one of the leaders. It was just amazing to be able to hang out with him at this seminar. And there was a Piedmont blues man called John Cephas, who was born in D.C. but grew up in Bowling Green. And he was at the seminar. He was in his 70s when he was there. But he was like a first generation Piedmont blues guy. And he was there teaching lessons and hanging out and jamming with us. One night he almost got into a fist fight in the restroom of the dorm with John Renborn's son. They didn't know who they were. He didn't know it was John Renborn's son. It was the first night of camp. And we were up hooting and hollering until 3 a.m. and Cephas was tired and he wanted to go to sleep. So he came he came into the lounge where we were hanging out, and he was so pissed off and he wanted to fight someone, and John Renborn's son was there, and he's like, "Oh, hey, don't talk to me like that." And they almost got into a little scuffle there, but we calmed everybody down, and we made it quiet for Cephas. But yeah, Cephas was there, man. Look up Cephas and Wiggins. That song, Richmond Blues.
Come on by, Bulldog. I'm on shuffle to Greyhound. Gonna use these dogs, run my good gal down. Gonna use these dogs just to watch me while I'm sleeping. Yeah, to keep them in, making that early creep. I was standing down in Richmond on a corner near Broad and Main. I walked to police, said, "Son, what is yours right now?" I told him that my name is stamped on my shirt. I'm a woman for lover, sure ain't got to work. My little gal went away, didn't even write me up. Got my mind all worried like water in a deep blue sea. Then I'm going uptown. I'm on top of that cheap police. That little gal in trouble, sure can't find no peace.
Cephas was amazing. He can play, he can sing. He was a real Piedmont blues man, and he was teaching at this seminar I went to at Columbia. He was there every time for five
that's
or six good. Years.
That's incredible. Yeah.
Just the story and the thought of this of these seminars really are amazing, and to think how much of a part Reverend Gary Davis played in that, it's just kind of incredible where a musical life can take someone and how it can touch other people and what it ends up spawning. It's really kind of an incredible story. To the point where you're ready to throw some blows in the name of Reverend Gary Davis. That's just wonderful. I love it. So this has been a really wonderful conversation, Kurt, and I thank you so much. I can't believe more than an hour has gone by. I just looked at the timer and it's just flown. I wanted to sort of crystallize a little bit here at the end, the last section, and talk about what are the important songs and recordings of Davis, and maybe those associated with him. And so maybe I don't know if it's an obvious question, but where would you start if somebody's listened to this podcast, has never listened to Davis before, can hear the excitement in our voices and the enthusiasm? How would you guide them to begin
to dip their toe in?
It's going to be really easy because the movie and the album have the same name. The album is called Harlem Street Singer. Yep. That's the best place to start. He did that in the late 60s. It was a folk mm-hmm. revival album, but he was playing the songs that he recorded back in the 30s. He was just doing new, updated versions of those songs.
Yeah. So
start with Harlem Street Singer. I think that's his best overall, most consistent record. Then I would go back to the one you have, the 35 Sessions, the early stuff. And that's on the streamings. I was listening to it myself a couple days ago, so that's available. And then if you want to hear his blues stuff, you got to look for the live recordings. So there's a lot of like live and student recordings out there where he was doing mm-hmm. his blues, his, you know, cocaine and hesitation blues and stuff like that. But yeah, Harlem Street Singer is a great place to start.
Okay. Okay. And I can't recommend the film highly enough. You know, you can rent it and watch it a couple times for $3 or $4. And it's also, I don't know, I think it's like $8 to purchase it. So you could have it, you know, as a reference in your digital library if you wanted to do that as well. Would you say, Kurt, that there are, I mean, what, I don't know, are there definitive recordings of his material or at least maybe some standout ones that are played by other artists out there? And I know...
Well, I would just look up Yorma's version of Hesitation Blues. Yesterday, I heard Yorma and Janis Joplin singing Hesitation Blues with someone typing on a typewriter in the background, and it sounded fantastic.
That's crazy.
And at one point, Janis Joplin is like, keep going on that typewriter. It sounds good, you know, and Janis is belting out Hesitation Blues and Yorma. But any Yorma versions of Keep Your Lamps Trimmed and Burning, Hesitation Blues, Death Don't Have No Mercy. Yorma's always, he's good for Davis covers. And, you know, the dead versions of Death Don't Have No Mercy and Samson and Delilah, it sort of becomes a different song, but it's still the same, you know, the same chords and melody and everything. But right. There's five songs that players always play when they get together if they know Davis songs. So I just wanted to list off those five songs. The first one you usually learn is called Let Us Get Together. So definitely hear that. Just hear Davis play it on Harlem Street Singer. Hesitation Blues, you have to look around for his versions of that, but Yorma's versions are really good. Death Don't Have No Mercy, classic. Davis's version on Harlem Street Singer is amazing.
Yeah.
Candyman is a really old song. It's from the turn of the century, so it's 125 years old now. Candyman is really fun to play, but it's hard to get a good version of it. It sounds mm-hmm. a little... It's hard to record that song. You just have to play it and feel it. But we always play Candyman when we get together. It's so much fun to play. Mm-hmm. But, look around for the Davis versions if you want. Oh, and did I say Keep Your Lamps Trimmed and Burning? Good versions of that, but those five we play when we get together with the, you know, the guys that went to this seminar that we, you know, that I still keep in touch with. And we get together, we play those five at least, but there's others. There's a lot there. Just listen to every song on Harlem Street Singer as a banger, and definitely listen to Samson Delilah. We don't play that cause it's too hard, but Samson and Delilah is his biggest hit. Just listen for the counterpoint of the bass lines, the melody going up and the bass lines going down, and then how he's moving around the neck. And just, it's the closest one person with a guitar can get to Led Zeppelin, I think. When I heard it, I was like, wow, this is really driving hard. And it's just one dude on a guitar. So yeah, Samson and Delilah on Harlem Street Singer. And listen, he does a solo where he's like talking and responding to himself, and he's singing, and then he's responding on guitar to what he sings.
Wow.
Just listen for that kind of stuff when you listen to him.
I know there's a moment in the movie when he starts up Hesitation Blues, and he says to himself, "Oh yeah, that's that hesitation," and then he keeps going. he's got himself in the pocket, so he knows he's on the right track. It's pretty incredible.
So much fun to play, man. I love that. I love that song so much.
And I would put in just very briefly, if one reason to look at the movie, or just look up Reverend Gary Davis and look at some photographs of him. He's got this face that's round and expressive, but it just radiates something like this human energy. Even looking at a still photograph of him, I find it to be quite incredible.
Wait a second, Pat. There's one more thing we got to talk about. I brought it up earlier. How did he protect himself when he was playing on the streets in Durham?
Oh, yes. I forgot about this. Yeah.
He had a gun. Reverend Gary Davis carried a gun.
Oh, my goodness.
They talk about it in the movie where he was signing up for a cabaret license, and Stephen Grossman was filling out the form for him, and he filled out, have you ever been charged with a crime? And he said no. But then his license wasn't approved because he was he did commit a crime, and he was arrested for carrying a handgun. in the movie, Roy Bookbinder is like, if you think it's scary being in a room with a blind guy who's holding a pistol, you're right about that. It's very scary. And even Woody, who was like a teenager taking lessons from him, talked about Davis having a gun. I'm like, why That's would right. Davis have a gun? He's blind. And he said, I don't know. He figured out how to know where people were by listening to him. And he didn't want, he had to protect himself. So he had a gun with him.
That's crazy. That is crazy. I'm so glad you remembered that, because that is such a wonderful part of the story. It really is.
Oh, man.
He's got precise control with his guitar, so maybe we could trust him with this shot. When was the last time you got together with your group and played Davis songs, and do you have any plans to do so in the future?
That's a good question. I think the last time we got together was in Montclair, New Jersey in August.
Okay.
So it's time to schedule another one. We usually get together a couple times a year, once at my house and once at someone else's house. Since these seminars that started in 1999, we've gotten together a couple times every year. And people came from California to some of these parties, and from Pittsburgh. Ernie Hawkins was the name of the player from Pittsburgh who went to Davis's house the day after he graduated from high school. Ernie Hawkins,
okay.
He's a great teacher.
Okay.
And a legend. But anyways, we get together a couple times every year. We play Davis songs, but we play like Tom Petty and and Beatles. We play everything, but we always throw in the Davis songs. And most of us can remember how to do it. I've been sort of transcribing them to ukulele in the last couple of years, but they're still the same songs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I like ukulele. It's easy to hold on the couch, and it sounds good. It's different, so it sticks out a little bit.
At some point, we'll have to hear your song that takes the Reverend Gary Davis chords. What was it?
There's a song I recorded called 10 Giant Steps to the Candy Store, and it's based on a Davis song called Oh Glory, How Happy I Am, which was the first song that Woody taught us at Columbia. He started with that song, Oh Glory, How Happy I Am, is the Davis song. And I wrote a song with the same exact guitar part called 10 Giant Steps to the Candy Store. And I think it's on my album called Just Silly, I think.
Okay.
But yeah, it's a pure Davis lift on my part. But I asked Woody about it. He said, you know, don't worry, because Davis would love it. He would be all about it. Don't worry about it. It's great.
That's great.
I had Woody's blessing. Bob Brosman was the producer. So it sort of came from that whole seminar that I talked about, that whole recording session.
Well, I'll tell you, I think that's a great way to go out, because it'll encapsulate your spirit. And I want to thank you again very, very much for this and your sharing of knowledge, which is incredible. You have an incredible amount of knowledge on this topic, and I'm sure many, many others. But thank you so much for sharing it. And I think that I think there'll be a lot of people who may get into Davis a lot deeper, or for the first time. And I think that'll be a wonderful experience. I'm envious of those who get to discover his charm and his incredible musicianship. So an undervalued figure in music history, but you've got me convinced. I definitely think he's one of the most influential guitarists that you can think of. Case closed from me anyway.
Thanks, Pat. This was a pleasure. Thank you so much for letting me ramble and tell these silly stories.
I enjoyed every minute of it. All right, everybody, we'll go out with Mr. Kurt Music here. Kurt Gallagher doing a little bit of the spirit of Reverend Gary Davis. And with that, we will talk to you guys. We will talk to you guys later. Kurt, thank you so much.
Sure thing, Pat.
Steps to the candy store, 9 giant steps to the candy store, 8 giant steps to the candy store. Do you know how many more? 7 giant steps to the candy store, 6 giant steps to the candy store, 5 giant steps to the candy store. Do you know how many more? Steps to the candy store, 3 giant steps to the candy store, 2 giant steps to the candy store. Do you know how many steps more? 1 giant step to the candy store, come on inside the candy store, we're like a bunch of kids in the candy store.
Yeah, he wasn't about take two. He was only about take one.